Connected Libraries wish to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which this podcast is being held. We wish to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander peoples who may be listening.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Book Matters. We are your one-stop destination for everything about books, reading, and authors. We chat to great writers from Australia and all over the world, as well as bringing you some great reading reviews from our staff here at the library. So make yourself a cuppa, sit back, and enjoy. In this episode, Connected Libraries celebrates History Month, where our local history librarian, Kate, speaks to debut author Heather Arnold about her research and her new book, Enchanted Beneath the Bluff, Agnes and Geraldine's Pursuit of Elwood's Elusive Black Diamonds, a fascinating story set in Elwood and St Kilda in the days of suffrage and spiritualism set in the 1890s. We hope you enjoy.
I'm joined this morning by Heather Arnold, co-author of Enchanted Beneath the Bluff, Agnes and Geraldine's Pursuit of Elwood's Elusive Black Diamonds, which was co-written with Isaac Douglas Herman. Heather is a local historian, president of the Coowee Rup Swamp Historical Society, and secretary of the Southeastern Historical Association. A librarian for over 40 years and the local history librarian at Casey Cadinia Libraries from 2005 to 2021, Heather is passionate about local history and is the author of three blogs, Coowee Rup Swamp History, Victoria's Past, Rescued and Retold, and Carlo Catani, A Tribute to Victoria's Engineer-in-Chief. Only a few months ago, Heather also received an Award of Merit from the Royal Historical Society Victoria for her exceptional service to local history. Heather, welcome to Book Matters Podcast.
Thank you, Kate, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
No worries at all. Now, I've had the pleasure of reading your wonderful book, but would you be able to explain for our listeners what the story is about?
So the story is about two women, Geraldine Monet and Agnes Simmons, who between 1893 and 1897 drilled for coal on Red Bluff at Elwood. And they were guided in this venture by a spirit because they were spiritualists. And so they were advised by a spirit, by a medium, that they should drill for coal at this spot on Red Bluff. And they did drill for coal. They didn't actually find any coal, but in the time of their enterprise, the 4 years, they actually drilled down 3,957 feet and 2 inches, which was the deepest a diamond drill had ever dug at any time in Australia. So, you know, it was an interesting engineering feat. It was interesting because generally you don't consider two women to be in charge of a coal drilling enterprise. And it was interesting, of course, because they were advised in this venture by a spirit. So there's a whole lot of interesting aspects about the whole venture. And, yeah, so we decided to write about it. And I'm really happy with the book, the way it turned out.
Fantastic, as you should be. It is really, really a fascinating read. How does it feel now that it's out in the world officially, Heather?
Oh, it feels really good because I do write a lot of history. I write a lot on blogs, and the whole idea of writing a book though was a little bit scary to me because when you write online, as you would know if you write a blog, and you make a mistake or you want to add something, you can just go back and do that. You can just re-edit, revisit, add photos. But like in a book, it's, you know, set in stone for the rest of its life. So I found it a little bit scary, but now that I've done it, I'm thrilled with the way the book looks. I think it looks really nice. It's well produced. It's got a really good index. And if you're a librarian or a family historian, indexes. And I'm really proud of the book. I just think it's such a wonderful thing to. I'm holding it in my hand here now. It's such a wonderful thing. I'm just happy about the whole process. But of course, now comes all the hard work because we just published it ourselves. And we're marketing it ourselves as well. So that means that there's a bit of hard work on our part now to get into bookshops and to get a bit of publicity for it. But all in all, it's been a wonderful process. So
fantastic. And hopefully having you on the podcast will help a little bit, get people a little bit more interested. Yeah. Heather, what inspired you and Isaac to actually tell this story about Agnes and Geraldine?
So we actually came at it from different angles because Isaac and I had ridden before together on Carlo Catani because we both have an interest in Carlo Catani, who was the Public Works Department engineer in Melbourne from the 1800s. He died in 1818. So we'd worked together before. So anyway, because I was local history librarian, I'd come across Agnes Simmons, who died at Callista Yeah. Which is just outside the Kasigadinia boundary. And I thought to myself, I could write about her because she's an interesting woman. And then I only knew about her because she was considered to be the hermit of Callista. And when she died, she left all her money to the what became the RSPCA. Mm. So she was an interesting woman. So I'd come across her. And then Isaac already knew about the coal mining venture because he lives in Elwood and he does tours around Elwood. So he knew about the coal mining venture. And somehow we worked out that Agnes was connected to the coal mining venture and he already knew about it. So somehow we sort of connected it all together and did more research and found out that they were involved in this coal mining enterprise with Agnes and Geraldine were involved in the coal mining enterprise. So we really came at it from two different angles and just realised that we both knew part of the story and then we just started researching the story.
Yeah, and it just seems to have unravelled from there. I mean, you mentioned earlier, Heather, that they were both quite influenced by spiritual practices. That's what drew them to searching for the black coal at Elwood. Yes. That influence of spiritualism is really interesting. That was quite prevalent at the time, wasn't it?
It was quite prevalent at the time, and it's a bit, you know, when I read about spiritualism, I can sort of understand why people believed in it because at the time there's even people like Alfred Deakin, who was the Prime Minister, and also Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes novels. He was also a spiritualist. So there was all these other famous people or respectable people, whatever you want to call them, who were also involved in spiritualism. And Conan Doyle wrote that after World War I, more people became involved in spiritualism because, you know, so many people lost so many of their loved ones during World War I that they really wanted to find a way to contact them and to say their final goodbyes or something, I presume. And that really sort of resonated with me. And you just wonder, so sometimes I wonder, is there anything in spiritualism or is there not? But I can understand why people have this desire to talk to their loved ones who have died. But as for using spiritualism and being guided by a medium to drill for coal, I think that's a more interesting thing. But they were keen spiritualists and they lived their beliefs and they really believed it. And when I first read the story that they communicated with the spirit by a medium, I thought, well, was this medium really just, you know, ripping them off? Was he just trying to say to them, you invest here and I'll rip off all your money? It didn't happen because in the end, the Royal Historical Society actually has a spreadsheet of all the income and outgoings of the Victorian Coal Mining Company, the company that drilled for coal, and every single cent is accounted for. So I did think at the start that they were ripped off by this medium. I don't believe they were because, you know, there was no way that the money disappeared. So I think they were just truly and honestly guided by the fact that they believed this would help them. And also at the time, the 1890s, it was a time of depression. So they thought that if they could find coal, and there was lots of other coal mining enterprises in Victoria at this time, that it would really help Victoria's economy. So they really did it for the best reasons to help the economy. And coal, of course, was what powered the economy at the time. So they did it for all the best reasons. And just that spiritualism was just a bit of an odd thing. But
yes, it's interesting.
At the start, there were reports about the coal mining venture in the newspapers, but as it wore on and they didn't find coal, some of the newspaper reports became quite sarcastic and derogatory. Mm. And I sort of took the tone that they were misguided, foolish women who were led astray by this medium. So, you know, they did have to face a whole lot of ridicule in the papers.
Yeah, they did. And they were both quite the social reformers too, Heather, weren't they? They were both quite involved in the suffragette movement as well.
Yeah, well, Agnes especially. So Agnes was the Victorian Women's Suffrage Society, which was founded in 1884. And she was quite the feminist in that sense. And I really admire her for that because feminism at the time, women's suffrage at the time, was yet another organisation or belief that was ridiculed like spiritualism was. Mm. So, you know, we were sort of thrilled when we found out because we didn't know that initially that she'd been involved in the Victorian suffragette movement and we actually found a photograph of one of the original committee and I was sort of thrilled to find that she was involved in that. Geraldine wasn't so much involved with the suffragette movement, but her sister in England, Cecilia, she was involved in it quite heavily in England. So Geraldine did have this whole background of social reform and social movements in her family.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And the other interesting part of the book, Heather, that I found fascinating is how widespread their travels took them in Victoria. They both weren't confined to Melbourne at all, were they?
No, well, they weren't. Geraldine arrived here, I think it was on my head, 1888, and then she moved up to Mildura, like a lot as I would have thought, because Mildura had just been established as a irrigation colony and lots of other people had moved there. But, you know, it's very remote. Like for someone from England, like it was quite a remote place to say. I can understand why you come to Melbourne, cause especially as her sister was in Melbourne. But to go all the way to Mildura to a newly established town and, you know, it's a lot, much different climate than it is to Melbourne. Like it was a bit of an adventure really. And I can't work out, she was there for a couple of years. We can't work out whether she visited, we know she owned property, whether she was there for 2 years living there permanently, like living there full time, or whether she actually just visited there. But as we say in the book, like the trip from Melbourne to Mildura took like in about 2 days. So like it was a real effort to get there. Anyway, but yeah, so she spent her time in Mildura, but she had an attachment, Geraldine, to other land settlement areas. So she was involved in, at the time, the 1890s, there was all these village settlement schemes where the government would put the unemployed people from the city onto small farms in the country. And she was quite passionate about this and the way she'd be working and trying to support these people on the farms, not so much through finances or anything, but, you know, she was at one stage she gave evidence to the minister, one of the politicians, about why they should be supported. So she had this sort of quite interesting attachment to the plight of small farmers. And then Agnes herself, she lived in Packington Street in St Kilda. So she owned her house in Packington Street in St Kilda, and then she acquired 10 acres at Callista under another sort of settlement scheme, and she lived there part-time, just sort of lived there as a weekender. But from about 1912, I think she moved down there permanently and really became part of the community in Callista or South. It later became South Sassafras. And that was just like a small community with lots of little small farms. But she really did become part of the community. And I think that's sort of interesting as well.
Yeah.
They did stay in Melbourne, but they both had houses. As I said, Agnes bought a house in Packington Street, St Kilda, which has been demolished. We did have a look for it. And Geraldine bought a house in Fitzgerald Street in the South Yarra, which is still there. So the fact is that both these women came from very upper middle class backgrounds in England and had all this money behind them. I mean, they weren't like billionaires, but they had money behind them that they could afford to buy a house and that they could live relatively comfortable. And this income, we know, like Geraldine herself, she came from a much more wealthy background than Agnes. I mean, her parents, her ancestors were Huguenot refugees from France, but they seemed to have quite a lot of money. And Agnes Simmons, her father was a tanner. He had a tannery and he employed over 50 people. And on her mother's side, her mother's family had farms with, you know, quite a lot of acres and employed lots of people. So there's evidence that Agnes received money regularly from England. And so even though she had to support herself and she was a swimming teacher and also did gymnastics, you know, there was some evidence that both of them were sort of supported from their with family money. And this did enable them to A, buy property and B, I was going to say indulge themselves. I don't mean that. But the freedom to get involved with social causes such as feminism and suffrage and the suffragette movement and also spiritualism and later on theosophy, which was one of Geraldine's main interests. So she, theosophy, and I have to tell you honestly that I understand what spiritualism is. I find it a bit harder to understand what theosophy is. But both Geraldine and her sister Delia, who'd come over from England via New Zealand, they were both involved in the theosophy movement in Melbourne and were some of the leaders in the movement. And theosophy was another one of these beliefs. It was a bit like spiritualism that was a bit ridiculed at the time. So once again, they were women who would had the strength of character. Decide they wanted to be involved in this movement. They became leaders in the movement. They put their money basically where their mouth was and they supported this movement and they didn't care what people thought about it. And I just think that's a wonderful way to live, that you stick to your beliefs and you just put up with what the ridicule and everything is.
So. Yeah. And they were both quite philanthropic in that way too, Heather. Like you say, they had money, their own money, that they used for causes dear to their heart, even up until the end of their lives.
So, and it was interesting, Agnes herself, there's all these rumours about Agnes that not because she was a feminist, she only ever kept female animals. Mm-hmm. Male animals. I don't know whether that was true or not. There are other rumours around, or other stories, that both Agnes and Geraldine owned a farm together at Clayton, which I don't believe is true. I can't find any evidence for that. But once that, when Agnes died, she left all her money to the, as I said, the Royal Society, RSPCA, or run the RSPCA. And like, that was quite a generous bequest. And they put up her headstone at the Ferntree Gully Cemetery. But she really was an animal lover. And her will itemised what would happen to her horses. And one horse she left to a local girl, another horse loving neighbour. And the other horses, she specifically, well, what should happen to her when she passed. So I thought that was quite nice. And you wonder whether Agnes Simmons, people said about Agnes Simmons that, you know, she, I think I said this before, that she was antisocial and her and everything, but I don't find the evidence for that. And I think it was more the fact that she was a single woman, an older woman, and in society these days, sometimes older women are invisible. And I just think that there was just a way that they commented about her because they, sometimes I feel society doesn't respect older single women. I just think that was part and parcel of that. But she was involved in the community, but sometimes people who are close to, how do I say this, who are close to animals and put more love, sometimes I think they become attracted to their animals because they're less judgmental than humans. And I wonder whether that was the case with Agnes, that she has a real love of animals.
Yes, because of, like you say, the sarcasm and the way that their ventures were spoken about.
Yeah, whereas an animal doesn't judge you for your beliefs or anything, so they do. Yeah. They judge what you are. Yeah, so anyway, but I don't know.
Fascinating. It takes us into, Heather, of course, I can't let you go without asking you about the research process. We're both librarians and historians, so that's our bread and butter. How did you find researching for this book?
Oh, well, so what I do when I do any research on a person is I actually start a family tree on Ancestry because then I need to sort of know their background. So I started a family tree for both these women on Ancestry.com. And then if you do a family tree on Ancestry, they're always suggesting things for you, all these hints. So there's actually quite a lot of information I could find about them. And then once I knew who their sisters were, then I went through old newspapers, like not only the English newspapers, some of them are online, and Trove. And you'd be amazed what information you can find if you're a good Trove researcher. So, you know, you can find references of Geraldine Monet in Mildura and of the Theosophical Society. We also went to look through the records of the Spiritualist Association in Victoria. They were very generous and gave us access to their old minute books, and the library at the Theosophical Society. We did research there as well. So it was a whole combination, and then of course lots of books as well, but just to give us general background information on theosophy and spiritualism. But we did have the actual, and this is why librarians, as you know, are so wonderful, we did actually find that there had been a story that the records of the Victorian Coal Mining Company were deposited at the Melbourne University, and so we spoke to the appropriate librarian there, and then she found out that there are records at the Royal Historical Society. So then we went to the Royal Historical Society and found they had the spreadsheet of the, you know, outgoings and income of the Victorian Coal Mining Company, and they also had a photograph donated at the same time of Helena, the steam engine that powered the diamond drill that drilled for coal. And that was just the most marvellous find. We were absolutely excited to find this. And from the Royal Historical Society point of view, they were happy that we found it because they had no idea that those two items were connected, even though they knew that from the accession number that they were given at the same time. And it turns out that the secretary of the RSPCA when Agnes died was Alan Latham, and he was also the secretary of the Royal Historical Society of Victoria. So once we found this material, but in the end, like, the Royal Historical Society has gained in the sense that they can now connect these items together. And there was a third item as well, another spreadsheet. So it really tells you the power of how good libraries can be. And if you just get onto the right librarian, it's open up for you, because we just found it wasn't that the librarian at Melbourne University just directed us to the Royal Historical Society because she realised the material was there, and all of a sudden, you know, boom, you know, we had this wonderful resource or resource. So, you know, that was sort of the way. And some chapters I wrote, some chapters Isaac wrote, and then we revised the whole thing as a process of writing a book. I won't say it was fun, but I won't say it was smooth sailing the whole way. But we're very proud of the book in the end and how it turned out.
Yeah, and you should be. And the one thing that strikes me too, Heather, looking through the references, which of course I did, being a librarian, the strength of evidence that came from historical societies as well, the smaller groups.
And I should have mentioned that because the Mombok Historical Society, for instance, they had a lot of information on Agnes Simmons and was so generous and provided us with photographs and information. And I'll email the president, Armin Richter, and say, oh, you know, I didn't quite understand this. And he'd email me back and they were wonderful. And there was other historical societies as well that we did research with and they were all very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Once you start on the road to any sort of research, it is certainly worth trying to see what local historical societies have. Much of their material, as I can speak from experience, is not digitised and sometimes it's not even catalogued online. So you don't know what they've got. So, yeah, historical societies are really a treasure trove of information or could be a treasure trove of information.
They are, yes. Definitely don't discount them if you're doing your own research.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Who do you see this book as appealing to, Heather? What sort of people should read this book?
Well, certainly if you live in Elwood or St Kilda, because it is an interesting history of that area and quite an unknown part of the history of Elwood. And also anyone interested in the history of women in Victoria, they're interested in coal mining, because this is an adventure, a coal mining venture. Like everyone knows about Coal Creek and you know about all those coal mines and, of course, the state coal mine at Wonthaggi. But this is just one interesting aspect of our coal mining history that most people don't know about. I mean, it's not a technical book.
Yes.
But I think more people who are interested in the history of women or women's studies and early feminists in Victoria, yeah.
Yeah, yes, I would definitely agree. And, you know, I ask this of authors who I've interviewed that write historical fiction. So your answer might be a little bit different, but what do you want readers to take away from reading Agnes and Geraldine's story, Heather?
I want them to take away from the fact that in Victoria in the 1890s, there were these two strong, independent women who lived their life as they wanted to live their life and didn't care what other people thought about them. And I just think that that's a really good thing, that you have the strength of character to live your life as you want and not, of course, hurt anyone else. Live your life as you want and you can not worry about what society thinks about you, because you can limit yourself so much if you're forever worried about, oh, what do people think? What do people think? And in reality, you need to live your own life. I think that's what I hope people take away from it, that these women did live their own life and did live true to their own beliefs. And that's why I want them remembered, because there's so many women didn't have the opportunity to live their dreams at times because they didn't have the money, didn't have the resources. And these women did. And I just think it's a wonderful story.
Yeah, and that definitely shines through, Heather, that message of just living as you want to live. Where can people connect with you further if they want to know more about this book or the other stuff that you're working on?
Oh, so we've got a blog called Agnes and Geraldine, blogspot.com, and that tells you where all the books are that you can buy, all the stockists, and it's also got our contact details there as well. So Agnes and Geraldine, one word, .blogspot.com.
Fantastic. So, Enchanted Beneath the Bluff, Agnes and Geraldine's Pursuit of Elwood's Elusive Black Diamonds, co-authored by the wonderful Heather Arnold and Isaac Douglas, is available for reservation at Connected Libraries. And as Heather said, a full list of stockists can be found on the Agnes and Geraldine blog as well. Thank you for taking the time to sit down with me, Heather. I really enjoyed this chat and I'm sure our listeners will too.
Thank you, Kate, for interviewing me. Having
no
me.
No problem.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you enjoy listening to Book Matters, we would love you to give us a rating at your favourite podcast provider. That way, other book lovers will be able to find us too.
For more information on the books mentioned in this podcast, please go to connectedlibraries.org.au or visit our Facebook group, In a Nook with a Book, where you can tell us what you've been reading. Until next time, this has been Tim, and you've been listening to Book Matters, a Connected Libraries podcast for people who read books made by people who love reading. Goodbye.